Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the toy department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah.
I don't know how I can be expected to just start the toy department when Kolsky's over there dropping okie dokie artichokes right before we start. But here we are.
Is it in today's climate? Is it inappropriate to say you were asking for it?
I don't know. It's probably fair to say I deserved it. Yeah. Probably
yeah, people will never hear what transpired. It's just the nature of the business. Hi.
Hello. How are you, sir? How was your week?
Oh, I'm good. Oh, I had a crazy week.
Still crazy? Anything you want to share with the listening audience?
Yeah. I got a wife.
You went up and got married on us in between now and the last podcast.
Correct. I got married.
Congratulations.
Thanks, man. It's very exciting. It's a happy time. We don't need to talk about it, but it was a good week.
It sounds like a good week. When is the honeymoon?
Working on it. It's going to be a minute.
But not next week.
not next week. No, sir.
All right. Well, we'll still pod next week then.
The pod goes on. The pod must go on.
Right. Some things are more important than getting married, I guess. All right. So usually I say we have a lot to talk about. We don't have a lot to talk about this week. We have a few good things to talk about.
Chill week. Well, we deliberately left our plate a little light for our own personal sports concerns.
Yeah. So how was your NCAA tournament weekend?
Well, the marriage affected my viewing time, but I watched most of what I wanted, which is to say Duke and Murray State. And
you got your money's worth on that score, right?
What's that?
You got your money's worth on that score, right? In terms of
I really did.
Seeing some Duke
I really did.
And Murray State action.
Yeah. Ja Morant was exciting. I'd be excited to have him on my Chicago Bulls. And obviously, I already knew that about Zion Williamson, and I would say I feel okay about R.J. Barrett and not so good about Cam Reddish, but at least I've scouted. And, interesting, if there's a way to finagle, depending on where the Bulls end up, I wouldn't mind Trey Jones as a point guard, but that would involve, getting him later in the draft, if he does, in fact, come out. From watching Duke, I think he's underrated. Anyway, that's what I got on the teams I watched. But overall, it didn't seem like a very exciting first weekend. Chalk, right?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't the lack of upsets or the lack of buzzer beaters. It was sort of the combination of those things. Like, they just weren't. I mean, there were some great moments, but quantity-wise, it was just not what you usually expect from the first weekend in terms of competitive crazy things happening, you know what I mean?
So one of my questions about that is, it feels like somewhat regularly we have these exciting upset filled or buzzer beater filled first two rounds, first weekend, and then the tournament kind of peters to the end. So is it possible that having all these battle-tested, higher-ranked teams could lead to a better finish?
Yeah, no, I do think that happens. I mean, it is one of those things where it's like it's really exciting when Loyola of Chicago gets to the Final Four, but then they're in the Final Four. it's like when it comes to, now you have to actually compete for a national championship and Loyola Chicago's on the stage, it doesn't quite have that same charm, unless you've stumbled into a Butler with Gordon Hayward turns out to kind of be a real team. I do think that we're sort of set up. I think these next, I guess, four rounds really are set up, because it does seem like you have a lot of heavyweights and some interesting talent. I mean, to me, you look at a team like Florida State as a four seed is a really intriguing team that's filled with a lot of talent. You know what I mean? Like, watching them play a one seed, you know, I'm interested in that. You know, watching some of these, like, you know, these two or three seeds like Tennessee and what, you know, what they'll have against a really good team, I think is going to be interesting. And then, you know, there'll be real challenges for the Dukes and North Carolinas of the world. So, yeah, I do have good expectations for the next couple of days.
You probably do need Duke in here to really keep it interesting, though, right?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about that because
they came real close.
There were, right, when you look at that game against Central Florida, right, between the lob that they screwed up, the failure to block out on the missed free throw, and the tap in or the, you know, the rebound tip just sort of rolling around the rim and out, any one of those three plays goes differently and Central Florida wins that game, right?
Correct.
So, you know, and I'm thinking about this as it happens.
If Taco Fall doesn't foul out on what was a real tough call,
yeah,
maybe he's in there on the final play to tip in that final basket.
Yeah, look, I am as Duke hatery as they come, and I thought that was a foul. So I'm
that really? One.
Yeah, well, especially because he was in, wasn't he in the circle?
So. Maybe that's what it was, but he was very vertical and still. I thought he was in position. Maybe he was in the circle. Maybe that's the issue.
Boy, watching him was a delight. I was pretty unaware of Taco coming into this thing, and that is an interesting physical specimen, and I wonder quite a bit about his NBA future.
He's got a long way to go skill-wise, but he is a large man.
Yeah, and with
Holy
not without
moly,
talent.
Is he a large man?
I just don't, you know, but it's weird because obviously the NBA has sort of moved away from needing 7'6" guys who are not super-duper mobile, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So, but it, you know, it will be interesting to see what the next level has in store for him, because somebody's going to take a chance on 7'6", right? Just somebody is.
You'd imagine so. I don't know where in the draft, but I have to believe he's a prospect somehow.
Yeah, it'll be exciting. But yeah, I was thinking during that game that if Duke loses, A, it will be delightful, but B, we'll be sort of missing them the rest of the tournament, right? So
correct, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm watching for now, certainly.
Yeah, but now I've reached the point where if they go out in the 16 or the 8, I'm cool. That can happen.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, left. You want Duke to lose, right? I mean,
yes.
We're all humans.
At a certain point, being any, really, for me.
Yeah, but again, it wouldn't have been great if they had lost in the first or second round. I really don't think.
No, and keep in mind that I have to win the thing in my bracket, so it would completely destroy
you do.
My.
Okay, so you've hedged your emotions with your money.
Yeah, I have indeed. I have
smart.
Indeed, I have works. It usually works out with Duke anyway.
That's smart.
all right, so we do have some more sports we're going to do later in the show, but I think maybe we should get to the items on our homework list.
Alrighty.
I want to start with The Dirt, mainly because I just watched it for a second time, but also because I'm curious. Uh-huh. I'm really just curious as someone coming to this with next to no knowledge of Motley Crue, what you thought
so
of the story.
Let's get into it.
Actually, you know what? Before I ask what you thought of the story, I'm curious. Was when you opened up your Netflix, was this the above the fold thing that they're sort of, you know, pointing your eyes at?
No, but it was in the popular now.
Gotcha. Okay. I got above the fold, and I couldn't tell if that was because, you know, my taste in it knows me.
Partially, yeah.
So I was wondering how true that was for other people. All right, so what'd you think of The Dirt?
Okay, so I loved watching this movie. I mean, I don't know if it's a great movie. I'll say I think it's possible that I'm giving it more credit than it deserves. But what it felt like was a consciously sort of camp, in the same way that Motley Crue is kind of consciously camp, but also I presume relatively accurate to the book, which is to say to Motley Crue's telling of their own story. And it's a remarkable story built around hilarious characters with some real darkness and twists. And I mean, it was pretty great. And I have to say, and I guess maybe because of Rhodey's, I may have come in wanting to like him, but Machine Gun Kelly, I thought, was so good and funny as Tommy Lee, and I thought really nailed who I think Tommy Lee is, which is just kind of a lovable dumbass who really does see himself and feel that he is a romantic.
Yeah, I think that's true. And Kelly really nails the physicality of Tommy Lee. I think that's what really impressed me. Like, he got the walk down and some of
strut. It's like a strut.
Yeah. And just a lot of the general mannerisms and manner, like that part they, you know, nailed. Now, look, obviously you have access to the best Tommy Lee on set consultant in the world when you're making
sure.
The movie. But still.
Tommy Lee is the one guy of them who, you know, it's funny. I knew the names. I knew all the names. In fact, I knew more names of Motley Crue members than I knew songs by Motley Crue, really, which is an interesting phenomenon that I don't know how to explain. But Tommy Lee's the only one who I really – I don't know why. I guess just he was kind of a presence on MTV later on than the other guys.
Yeah.
And I really thought it was a tremendous acting job. And when you see the sort of side-by-sides at the end – I thought they all did phenomenal jobs. Ramsey Snow as Mick Mars was very funny.
Yep.
Well,
and that's, I think, one of the advantages of Motley Crue as icons, as an image, as a their charisma, right? Is that most bands, it's kind of one or two guys, and then there's the other guys. You know what I mean? But, you know, in Motley Crue, it's really kind of everybody. The bass player is really, like, the musical engine behind the band. You know, the drummer is this, like, crazy dude who's, you know, banging celebrities. You got the singer's a singer, obviously, so he's going to be up front. And then you got this, like, vampire on guitar. So it's,
right. You
know, everybody sort of has their thing. Whereas in, you know, Guns N' Roses, as great as it is, right, you're mostly thinking about Axl and Slash. You know?
Sure. And I think here's the other thing. I think this band's story and this film expressing the story benefit tremendously from the fact that through all the darkness, they're all alive. And at the end of the story, it says Motley Crue played for another 20 years. And went out with a bang and with a New Year's Eve show. And it's not a fairy tale. That's what happened.
Yeah. And sorry.
That is pretty remarkable and rare relative to their peers, I would say, right?
I would say most that everyone lived. Yeah. You know,
A, that
some
everyone
bands
lived,
keep playing,
B,
you know
that,
what I
like,
mean? But like they, you know, people
they went
died.
Out on their own terms 20 years later. Like, even, you know, Guns N' Roses are mostly alive, but it didn't go so well.
Yeah. But you know, they're still playing, so you know, for
well,
whatever it is,
they I guess they are. But you understand the point that I'm making, right?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a rare thing.
I think the fact that there's all this darkness that happens, but at the end of the story, like four dudes made it through with their relationships intact and a band intact, and then they played for as long as they wanted to play, and they hung it up, and they're all doing great.
Yeah, but to me, that's like that's a good thing, but I think it's also a bad thing. In that, here's what I mean by that. I, there's a lot of talk around this movie about the treatment of women, you know, or the way that the movie treats women, and I sort of think that's unfair, and that I really think the issue is in the way that Motley Crue treated women, like the subjects of the movie treated women. And there's no reckoning for that in the film because the band never really reckons with it, right? Like, there's no point, like, I mean, you know, they're all willing to go, yeah, we did a lot of stupid shit, you know, which is true, but, like, I don't really think that any of them sort of grasp it, because it's all like, we did a lot of stupid shit, woohoo, you know what I mean?
I agree with you. Obviously, I think we share similar opinions on the way they treated women, but how much, I mean, okay. There's obviously at least a couple scenes in the movie that go beyond just chauvinistic womanizing behavior.
Yeah. I mean, when we get beaten, you know.
Yeah, one woman gets hit in the face, which obviously.
Yeah, they're certainly cheated on in all sorts of horrific manner.
Yes.
You got the woman under the table at the Rainbow Room. I've been in the Rainbow Room many times, and I've not seen that, sadly.
Okay. I don't know what happened with Tommy Lee literally physically assaulting a woman and punching her in the face. And obviously, I don't even know what the statute of limitations on that sort of thing is, but I wouldn't mind seeing him prosecuted for that. Outside of that scene, I think what you see is scummy, filthy, inappropriate behavior with women that should be looked down upon, but engaged in with willing participants. Right? I mean, this is not an account of sexual assault. It's an account of repulsive womanizing.
Yeah. There's nothing like I'm not saying that they did anything necessarily illegal, you know, besides all the narcotics.
So all I'm saying is,
and the drunken driving and whatnot. You know what I mean?
No. I'm just making the point. I'm with you, and I don't think it's a sexist movie. I think they were a sexist band in a time where almost all of the major popular rock bands were selling flagrant sexism.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, like that was the sexism was the point almost. You know what I mean?
And certainly the point of a vast majority of their songs.
And look, and I guess you can make a case about, well, does this movie glamorize that? Does it really like actually look at that? But I, you know, my counterpoint to that is
it's a biopic, not a philosophical rumination,
right? It's Bohemian Rhapsody. It's like we could have taken all that stuff and whitewashed it, and you know, briefly shown it, but not really gotten into it, and made it a story about how they wrote "Kickstart My Heart." You know what I mean? But I don't know that would be a fair viewing of who
these
guys
are. Well, it
wouldn't
be accurate. Yeah. And Bohemian Rhapsody manages to be both inaccurate and not address any of the issues. Like, this movie does not in any way purport to address the issues. Right. But it is, at least, it seems, a reasonably honest accounting.
Well, reasonably. And look, and I think the other thing is I think the movie's also sort of honest that it's not totally on the level, right? Like, you know, there's a scene where you meet David Costable, who plays Dr. McGee, who's like the manager, and and they kind of break the fourth wall and go, okay, it didn't really happen like this. There was actually another guy. We edited him out. He was cool. Sorry about that. And then you move on. And that's I think also keeping within the spirit of the book. I think you'd actually really like the book. And so if you have some time, I'd recommend reading it. It goes quick. But it's a tough book to film because you've got four narrators who are in some way unreliable, and the story is told completely like without any sort of linear time sequencing, right? So, and there's all these things going on, you know what I mean? So it's a really tough book to film. I'm assuming they had to make a lot of hard choices, and for me, I mean, there's no Pam Anderson in this movie. That sort of seems unforgivable, right? When you're thinking about the story of Tommy Lee. Like, how do you not have the boat scene in this movie?
Yes, but it's not the story of Tommy Lee. It's the story of Motley Crue. And I think sort of to that point, I know the story of Tommy Lee, and it does involve Pam Anderson, but I really didn't know the story of Motley Crue, and I didn't necessarily care, other than they reference her obliquely, but that seems like a separate movie to me.
I guess.
Like,
I mean,
the Tommy Lee story.
How essential is the Tommy Lee Heather Locklear marriage to this? To the Motley Crue story, really, but there's plenty of time for that in here. You know what I mean?
They don't spend that much time on it. Yeah. But it does give you the opportunity to see Nikki Sixx mess up the wedding.
Right. And I guess that's an essential part of the story. Cause obviously Nikki Sixx's heroin addiction.
So that's to me is all, that's really all Heather Locklear, that. And then the scene where she comes in and is like, you're porn whore, which obviously is the Pam Anderson thing. Was it the Pam Anderson thing?
I think that may have actually just been another porn whore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That is so funny. I assumed that was Pam Anderson.
I don't actually think it is.
Oh, my God. Well, that's excellent, first of all, and perfectly in line with the story we're telling about Tommy Lee. But either way... I do think the Tommy Lee movie is a different movie about how he maintains that relationship with his parents, which I thought was one of the interesting things that's not totally explored.
Yeah.
While living the life he's living. And also just how he goes from, like, he's not drinking in the first scene to, like, casually doing heroin.
Yeah, there is some of that. Yeah.
And then also I think his life as a select... Tommy Lee is really one of the first... Like, I know him just as a celebrity, not before. Honestly, I would have been able to come up with drummer for Motley Crue, but like I just think of Tommy Lee as that famous guy who had sex with Pamela Anderson on tape.
Yeah, no, I could see that, and I think it would be somewhat interesting to explore that, right? Even within the context of this film.
Yeah, but I feel this was very like. It's very, like you said, it's very oral history survey of the life and times of Motley Crue-ish. You know, I don't know that there's so much space for extra side stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. It's definitely covered in the book, by the way. So
I'm sure it is. And I'm sure there's lots of stuff that's covered in the book. And I someday perhaps will read it. But
do you think like... Like, did you enjoy, like, did you find all the debauchery entertaining? I was thinking about this. It's like they made sure they got that famous Ozzy scene in there, you know, which is sort of one of those epic Crue and Ozzy stories where he's snorting the ants and drinking pee.
Wait, that's like a well-known.
Yeah, that's a well-known rock legend that the time
no
Ozzy
kidding.
Snorted ants. I think the book largely popularized it, but yeah, it's definitely a. You know, one of those crazy Ozzy stories. There's, you know, obviously there's quite a few crazy Ozzy stories out there over the years.
There are.
but that's one. And it's like, I thought two things while watching this. One, like having someone tell you that story, I think is actually more entertaining than watching someone, you know what I mean? Than actually right. depicting it in some ways. Like mm-hmm. watching Ozzy drink Nikki Sixx's pee was, I don't know. Like it was not as romantic, you know what I mean, as hearing that story. And
yes, correct. Romantic is not the word that jumps to my mind either. Yeah.
And I do think that there is, you know, this warning that they're giving him, that Ozzy's giving the band about, you know, this seems all fun, but too much of this will actually make you mad. I do sort
of... How seriously do you take that when it's coming from a madman?
Well, I feel like he's actually the perfect messenger in that way. You know what I mean?
In a sense, I suppose you're right.
Yeah. And I do sort of wonder, like, I don't know. I think it would have been interesting because I'm sure that Motley Crue got to that place where they had had enough of, you know, and you don't really see, you don't ever really... see that, right? There's sort of the montage of like a night, you know, like the kind of blur that was a night of Tommy Lee, you know what I mean?
Right.
But like there's even that is no reckoning. It just sort of goes by in a blur and it's like, all right, and we're doing it again. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, you know, they all went to rehab, I suppose, but that doesn't go too deep either.
Yeah. Right. In fact, they deliberately say, all right, this is boring. This part, you know what I mean?
But again, so. It's really not a philosophical rumination, right? I mean, no. Fundamentally, that's not what we're doing here.
I just would have, I personally would have liked someone to have some understanding of, of just all the stuff. You know what I mean? Like, what this journey meant beyond, like, hey, we survived it and we did it together and we're still a band. You know? That part's great. I'm not saying you can't acknowledge that, you know? But, like, you know, you kind of kill the guy and.
Yeah,
I think there was a whole lot of other stuff, and you know, I don't know. I just would have liked to see a little bit more on some of that. So,
understand.
You know, I felt that was missing. That and Pam Anderson were the big things I felt were really missing. Also, a lot of extras look like Slash. Did you notice that? I kept thinking, like, oh, is that Slash?
Yeah, including the guy they killed.
Yeah. Yeah, he had the Slash hat, I guess, even before Slash.
And hair.
I vaguely remember Hannah Rocks, but I don't remember that dude wearing the hat. And I certainly remember the car crash controversy when it came out. But yeah, look.
I didn't know, obviously, about Vince Neil's daughter. It's a horrible story. I mean, there's a lot of darkness here, but it's unexplored darkness.
Indeed. Indeed. Oh, the other thing that's missing is, you know, it's supposed to be a warts and all portrayal, but Vince Neil stays the same weight throughout, which I feel like was the greatest trick.
Make that poor kid put on 50 pounds? That's rough.
I would have liked to have seen that, at least a little bit.
With Tom Hanks on him?
Yeah, it's like, where's your Christian Bale method acting, son?
Right.
We got a Netflix budget.
He was good.
Yeah, he was good. He was good, I thought. In the band, I thought, was pretty good at the end of the day.
And it's always a delight to see Costable. I mean, I really had fun.
You know who not good was Pete Davidson.
Yeah, I was excited to see him initially, and then he just was Pete Davidson for, like, every second
he was
on the screen.
Literally doing, like, an SNL sketch, basically, right? You know what I mean?
That's what it felt like. Did you realize the wife immediately noticed... what's her face? Oh no, I'm sorry. Different show, but SNL related. We'll get to it. Sorry.
Okay. Well, let's, maybe we should transition then. would this be, did you want to talk about Shrill?
Sure.
All right. So Shrill is the, new show on, Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
Starting A.D. Bryant of, SNL. I don't know, how many of these did you watch?
Three or four, I think.
Yeah, I think I got through three so far.
What spoiler alert, what happened at the end of the last one you saw?
Now I have to think about this for a second. She hooked up. That's what happened.
With the brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah, we're in the same spot.
Okay, great. Really enjoying the show so far.
Me too, and what I was about to say, thinking of the wrong property, was did you notice who played the mom?
Yeah, it's Pat.
It's Pat.
Why am I... Julia...
Sweeney,
yes, correct. There you go.
It's Pat.
It's Pat, and Daniel Stern. As the dead.
Very funny.
Did you notice that the best friend is the
Rosie from Miracle Workers?
Correct.
I did.
Yeah, nice job. All right.
A lot of connections to make here, folks.
Hopefully we will cover the end of Miracle Workers within the next week or two on this podcast. But back to Shrill, which I thought was really enjoyable. It was really interesting to see this character's perspective, which is not a perspective we get on television all the time. And more than just sort of, you know, saying like, you know, this is not like a diversity addition into my life. It's not like, oh, I'm glad I have the show with this new perspective. It's just, it's legitimately funny, you know, like it has a
lot of literal laugh out loud moments for me. Anyway, it is, I think, I just think Adi Bryant is really funny. I think Rosie from whose name I don't know, from Miracle Workers, is really funny.
It's a tough it's a tough one to pronounce.
Yes. All her friends, the boyfriend, I think, is kind of a riot and a little. I think they deliberately put him in a box at the beginning, you know? And he's more interesting and I don't know if complicated is the right word, but has more heart than you might initially suspect.
Well, yeah, I mean, he's an asshole, but he's a three-dimensional asshole, which is the way Correct. That assholes appear in real life. Like, no one is like, I am just completely self-involved and a total dick to be around at all points, right? It's like, you know, they do good things and they do bad things, but they tend to just do a lot more of the bad things than the good things.
And I think so often the version of this show that exists is a version where that guy is more caricaturesque than he ends up being here.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, you know, this is a show where I think where a lot of characters really have a humanity, and I think that's part of what allows it to be so funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And you know, I mean, I think there's a theme on this podcast, obviously, that the sort of shows we like find a way to color in even the characters that might seem, or in a normal show, be pretty rote and make them feel like actual full human beings. And I think that's a thing that this show does while, as you say, just being on its face hilarious.
Yeah, I think that's a thing we like. I also think we like shows that really seem to be born of a vision or a singular vision or viewpoint, you know, particularly in comedies.
Yes.
And I think this falls, you know, sort of right in that pile, you know, with A Better Things or an Insecure or Atlanta or, you know, Once Upon a Time, Louie, you know, shows that we've, you know, championed a lot in this pod. That's just kind of our jam. So if you have comedic tastes similar to ours, I think you really enjoy Shrub.
Yeah, no doubt. It really fits into all of those sort of unfortunately, I wouldn't call them tropes, but they're ways I think that modern television, it's sort of what we mean when we say peak TV, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And this is peak TV. Once again, shouts to your Hulu friend.
Yeah. Yeah. Hulu brought it this week. I'll give it up for Hulu. I will say too, the other thing I will say, you know, while we're giving Hulu props, I'm gonna ding Hulu here one little bit. It was super hard for me to find this show on Hulu.
It's hard to keep watching stuff you already started watching on Hulu. That's the thing I really don't understand.
I don't mean that from a like I hadn't heard of it, because obviously I'd heard of it. I mean that like it
literally
was,
hard to find.
Hulu's hard to navigate, man. I don't really understand who set that thing up.
It's like there's this stuff that happens with UI where it's like, okay, Netflix has done an incredible job with this. Can we all just do what Netflix is doing?
It's perfectly okay to rip them
off. Windows to, you know, it took friggin' 15 years for Windows to just be like, you know what? The Apple guys do it pretty well. Let's basically just do what they do.
Right. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because Apple jumped into the TV game this week, like announcing sort of their version of all of this. And
I'm into it.
Yeah, we'll see. It's weird. Like, they have had some really great successes, and then other times they jump into a market and you get the, you know, iPod Home.
Sure.
So it's
nobody wants that.
Right. And no one wants that. You're like, oh, you made a Zune for smart speakers.
Okay, so
we'll see where this TV thing goes with them. I'm you know, and it's gonna come down to what kind of content they stock it with at the end of the day, right?
As opposed to
whether you can navigate it or not. But Hulu, clean up your design, like, for real. And I agree with you 100% that it's hard to get back to something when you've watched it on there, which is the like the easiest thing of all to fix. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That should be just like whatever I've been watching should be right in front of my face when I sign on. That's how hard is that? Yeah, why is that?
What the thing I was already watching is by far the thing I'm most likely to want to watch now. You know what I mean?
Isn't it? I mean, who? I don't know. Who knows, man? Who knows?
Sad stuff. All right. Well, we'll stay with Hulu and talk about The Act, which I also thought was good, but is a much tougher watch. I felt like.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're very much on the same page about the stuff we watched this week.
Yeah, it made me. I think this is a compliment as much as anything, because I think it's a testament to the effectiveness of the movie.
Now, is this a true story? I haven't looked into it really.
I believe says is based on a true story.
Says that at the end. It has the thing at the end where it's like, although it's based on, right?
Yeah.
So,
and I mean, I don't want to look it up because I don't. Like, the movie, I feel like, or the show, oftentimes is sort of flashing, like, those big red, like, you know, motel kind of arrows of, like, this is going to go badly. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then eventually shows you the you know, part of the end where you know it's going badly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, like, I don't know. Like, I kind of want to see where it's, I still have this urge to kind of see where it goes. You know what I mean?
Very much so. I totally agree.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, the thing about this is it has both, and it is tough to watch. I think I got through 3 episodes of this one as well. It's really tough to watch if you ask me. But it's, the acting is fantastic. And it's managed to both build these characters in a really effective way and build a mystery in a really effective way.
Yeah.
I have a lot of questions. From what we've seen of the, like, later timeline, I have a lot of damn questions, man. There's a lot of confusing stuff happening here, and it's interesting.
It is interesting. And anytime, like, there's someone on the edge who, like, feels like they're kind of starting to get at it, right?
Yeah,
like, you really find yourself reading
for them. The
lady
doctor is like, I'm very into the lady doctor right now.
Yeah, I'm like, keep making calls.
Yeah, what's going on here, man?
I do, and I think we've talked about this, I do really feel like Munchausen syndrome is very overrepresented in TV and movies for how often it happens.
But isn't every syndrome, I mean, Munchausen's maybe more than some, but, like, pretty much every syndrome is overrepresented in television and movies.
Well, I don't know about every, but you're right. There are a lot. But this is one, just in terms of, like, it's pretty rare. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that doesn't happen.
And there's a fair amount of it on television. We, you know, we saw it in Sharp Objects this summer.
Correct.
But it's been in quite a few other things as well. But I'm still, that being said, still enjoying it. And I really, Patricia Arquette's having a song. Uh-huh. Like,
it's an Arquette-a-sance.
the commitment to the role here is like, it's just really obvious and apparent. And I think that whoever's playing the daughter is also really compelling.
Yes. She's from Fargo.
Oh. I didn't recognize her without hair.
The TV show.
Now I'm looking it up. Joey King? Is that it?
I believe that is it.
Good for her. But yeah, I would recommend this one, and I don't think it's one that a lot of people are talking about. So... there are 2 episodes out now, correct? I tried to watch a third.
I think 3.
Oh,
I think 3 maybe came out yesterday or so.
Gotcha.
Thereabouts.
Right. And we're getting to 8, so there's a lot more of this story to be told.
Yeah.
All right. Sounded like you had a little dot matrix printer rolling there for a second.
That is the work that I checked before the podcast. That was as loud as it's gotten so far. My deck is being repaired. That sounds very fancy, but I'm just a guy who rents a house that had a hole in the deck. Don't worry.
I don't know, man. You're getting married. You're getting a new deck. It sounds like
all of a sudden I got a wife and a deck with workmen on it. But no, and I'm not paying for that. It's a landlord issue.
Sounds like you got middle age problems all of a sudden.
Very much so.
All right, let's jump back into the world of sports before we get to homework, real quick, because Rob Gronkowski retired this week. And, you know, there's a life that needs to be examined.
Does it?
No, not at all. We already did the Motley Crue movie. It's pretty much the same story. but what I do think is interesting about this is the discussion around it, to me, has basically been, oh, there goes the greatest tight end of all time. And I'm sort of personally bewildered by this. Do you feel like we have seen the greatest tight end ever?
I think Rob Gronkowski at his best is the best tight end of all time. Yeah.
So you're saying peak Rob Gronkowski is better than any other peak tight end?
Correct.
Now, see, that I could buy. I guess if you're saying the very best of Rob Gronkowski is better than the anybody else's best,
I think that is as convincing and clear as the fact that he does not have the greatest career of any tight end.
Yeah, I mean, I think
Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates right off the bat had better careers than Rob Gronkowski. Period. End of story. And then I think we could talk about guys like Kellen Winslow and Mike Ditka who changed the position, et cetera, et cetera. But
yeah, I think you got to have Shannon Sharp in that discussion too.
Yeah, absolutely.
But if you,
and I think a guy like Travis Kelce is getting into the discussion career wise with Gronk, but at his best,
depending on how long he plays. But that that's the thing is, yes. And I get the at his best thing. You know what I mean? But Gronk played 8 years, 9 years, I guess, totally 2010 to 2018. He played 115 career games.
Yes, and I would say for about 50 of those, he was the most dominant force at the position we've ever seen.
Yeah. But to me, the fact that when you look at Tony Gonzalez and he played 270 games, and by the way, was Pro Bowl level at age 37, like that really ought to count for something in a sport where being able to show up week after week really matters.
I think this is one of the things we do wrong as a sports viewing public. I have no use for that debate over what's more important, being the best at your best or being great for long. I have very little use for that. To me, they're just separate things. And I don't, like I said, it's incredibly clear to me that when Gronk was at his best, he was both the best among, if not the best blocking tight ends we've ever seen, and clearly the most dominant force in the passing game we've ever seen from a tight end. He was utterly unstoppable at his best, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, Tony Gonzalez is second all time in catches, not among tight ends, among all players.
Again, it's equally clear to me that I don't think anybody in the tight end discussion compares to the pair of Antonio Gates and Tony Gonzalez when it comes to career achievement.
I personally think there's a little separation between Gonzalez and Gates, but
really,
I do.
I think that's because you had Gonzalez on your squad for so long.
He only played 5 years there. I guess that's a fair amount of time. I'm just looking at the numbers now. So Tony Gonzalez played 12 seasons in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Do you know how many games he missed in 12 seasons?
Like five?
Two.
Okay, yeah.
That's unbelievable. That is insane. He led the league in catches in 2004, you don't do that as a tight end.
Mm-hmm. How many games?
How many games? Career games?
Yeah.
270.
Okay.
He has 15,127 career yards receiving, which is Gronk has 7,861 to give you some perspective on that.
How many yards was that?
15,127 to Gronk's 7,800.
And touchdowns?
Touchdowns, Tony Gonzalez has 111 career touchdowns, and Gronk has 79.
Okay, let me give you Gates. Okay?
Okay.
He played 16 years of NFL football.
Still playing, right? Like, he's technically still active,
came back and played last year.
Yeah.
In those 16 years, played at least 15 games. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 times. 14 another, 13 another, 110, 111. That's his games played.
Yep.
He has 11,841 yards and 116 touchdowns.
Yeah.
I would say the biggest difference between those two guys is Gonzalez played in a couple of more aired out offenses and for
caught 400 more seasons. Caught 400 more balls. And
400 more balls, but five less touchdowns. So
yeah, look, but also 4,000 more yards. So
again, Tony Gonzalez and Antonio Gates career wise to me are way above everyone else. Maybe Gonzalez is a little above Gates, but having watched them, I think of them as very similarly capable.
Yeah.
And they have the greatest two careers of any tight ends ever. But again, I don't think either of them were as dominant in the two jobs of being a tight end simultaneously as Gronk at his best. And I think that's just as clear as the fact that their careers are significantly better than Gronk's.
Yeah. Sorry, by the way, I read the reference wrong. Gonzalez played 17 years, sorry, and missed two games.
Yeah, that makes more sense.
Yeah. 12 years in Kansas City and 5 in Atlanta.
Right. Gates and Gonzalez, again, they're pretty similar. Gonzalez played a couple more years and caught a few more balls and had more yards. But Gates, I mean,
I would also say, when you look at just from a narrative perspective, and I don't know, maybe it's a credit because, like, oh, there's no other Gronk, but like, I feel like Gonzalez really ushered in the idea of the basketball playing tight end, right? That, you know, that became this prototype that we see, that, you know, the Jimmy Grahams. I think Gates is actually in this category as well,
yes,
right?
Gates was too. Maybe. I don't know if there was a guy before Gonzalez. I do know he's not the first tight end of that mold physically and playmaking wise. He's just the first. He's the best of the
that group. Maybe. But I do think a lot of teams went and got themselves their own Tony Gonzalez over the years. And look, Gonzalez is going to make the Hall of Fame for sure. You know,
so is Gates,
and so is Gates, and so is Gronk. But I just don't like this idea of, like, oh, it's clear. Like, oh, it's Gronk's the best of all time. No knock on Gronk, but I'm like, is it clear?
Again, I think it's pretty clear that he was, when he was at his best, the best ever. I really do think that's pretty obvious.
So what is Gronk's best season in your mind?
I mean, I don't know. I guess have to pull it up.
Statistically, it's 2011. He caught 90 balls for 1,327 yards and 17 touchdowns, which is by far his most amount of touchdowns. And that's an absurd number of touchdowns, frankly. And if you measure that against Gonzalez's best season, 2000, he caught 93 balls for 1,200 yards and 9 touchdowns. 2004, 102 catches for 1,258 and 7.
I mean, Gronk also has the 14 and 15 seasons where he's over 1,100 yards both times, double-digit touchdowns. And in 2015, he's 16 yards per catch.
Yeah, that's pretty good. The peak's a little higher. I'll grant you that. But I like to
and
me,
he was a much better blocker.
The longevity matters to me.
It does, but Gronk was also a much better blocker than either Gates or, and I think that's in part because those guys are basketball players who didn't play football and block their whole lives.
Yeah.
I mean, Gronk is a pretty, he's unique in that he was born and bred to be a tight end, really.
Yeah. or professional wrestler, which I think he's going to get his shot at.
That's right. He's going to live his two perfect jobs. I also think he's incredibly unique in being – he has this character that actually on the Damon Bruce the other day described it on the radio as the lovable meathead next door. And I think especially as we go further in time and we adjust to a feminist society, hopefully, this is a more and more rare thing. A guy who is unapologetically a giant doofus, and nobody really hates him for it.
Yeah, I don't know. Lovable is somewhat up for debate, but he is. He's like a human kind of St. Bernard, right?
Yes, exactly. He's a Labrador puppy. And it's like, what, are we going to get mad at that? Come on.
Right. Like where you get annoyed, but you go, oh, all right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And how much of the annoyance is just that he's a Patriot? Like, if he was an Arizona Cardinal, I think he would have 100% approval rating.
Yeah, you're right. That might be true.
I really think that's remarkable when you consider guys like Steph Curry have haters all over the place.
Yeah, but I likewise, I think it's remarkable to watch a 37-year-old Tony Gonzalez drawing double teams on a team that had Julio Jones and Roddy White in some versions of their prime. That happened regularly. You know what
I
mean?
You're trying to make me an enemy of Tony Gonzalez's greatness, and I won't have it.
Okay.
I love Tony Gonzalez. Tony Gonzalez is great. He has an unbelievable career, and congratulations to him for his future Hall of Fame induction.
But again, my point is that the longevity, like, matters. Like, it matters to me as much as the peak when you're looking at a career, and we're talking about who is the best, and you're getting. What's that? 17 years versus 9. You know what I mean?
That's why I'm trying to make the point that, to me, I'm not devaluing the longevity. I'm just saying there's no way to quantify longevity versus peak. They're just simply separate qualifications. Gronk, to me, clearly had the better peak. Gonzalez and Gates clearly had the better careers, and I'm prepared to settle it at that. Because right. I don't know how to value one versus the other. There is no way to value one versus the other, as far as I can tell.
All right. Well, then, very clearly, then to say that Gronk is clearly the best tight end of all time is a misnomer, right? And part of our ongoing desire to proclaim everything that just happened the greatest.
Right. I think this is the problem here is the lack of subtlety. There is no such thing as objectively the greatest. Full stop. I do think, though, and in some cases, there's not even a really strong case for whose peak was objectively the best. But in the case of football tight ends, I do think there is objectively a very strong, compelling, not much of an argument against Gronk's peak being the best. And I also think there's a pretty compelling case that Gronk's overall career is simply not as good as Gates or Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Boom, period, end of story.
All right.
And I think, frankly, the greatest tragedy of Gronk's career is that he didn't retire a year ago, cost the Patriots a Super Bowl, and finished his career with 69 touchdowns.
Yeah, I'm surprised he actually just didn't. I'm surprised he wasn't playing to get to 69 touchdowns and just quit right there in the spot.
He had it in his hands, man.
Yeah.
He had the end of a season. He was beat up. Could have retired with 69 touchdowns. Pats probably don't win the Super Bowl. And instead, he ruined everybody's good time.
Yeah.
First time Gronk has been a party foul.
And shout out to Shannon Sharp, by the way, who
also great.
played in a less pass-happy era.
I remember guys like Ben Coates, like, that's why I say Gonzalez and Gates weren't really the guys who made the receiver as tight end thing popular. They were guys before that.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like there was a different mold. And you know, I'm not just saying, like, obviously there were pass catching tight ends before Tony Gonzalez. I was really kind of more talking about the specific style of player, that really tall, jump up, you know, guy who could jump, you know, go yeah, up and grab balls. Guy.
Isn't that yeah. basically what Shannon Sharp was, though?
Yeah, or maybe. Ben Coates? Maybe. You know.
That's I feel possible. Like those are similar dudes.
Boy, the all-time career receiving list is an interesting one. There's yeah, there's some dudes who are much higher up than you would expect.
And all of them are probably current or recently retired players.
Yeah. I mean, you know, let me just say Derek Mason has more catches than you think he does.
Well, yeah, because these guys were you know, the best
and he's been receivers retired
on mediocre teams.
For 8 years, you know what I mean?
And he was catching 100 balls a year probably, right?
Yeah, but you know, before they changed all these pass interference rules and stuff we're talking about, like Eric Molds is 37th all time.
That is surprising.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Machine Muhammad is 25.
It really tells you A, how incredible Jerry Rice was and B, just like how little passing there was really at all before like the '80s.
Yeah. It does. But I do not to go back to it, belabor the point, because I agree with you and I get it. But just the fact that Tony Gonzalez is the guy sitting below Jerry Rice on that list.
Remarkable.
Says a lot.
It is remarkable.
He's going to get passed by Larry Fitzgerald this year, though.
Good, because Larry Fitzgerald is incredible, too. But but yeah, I'm not the no shade to Tony Gonzalez, I assure you.
All right, let's do homework and get out of here.
All right, let's.
There's a lot of stuff coming to TV this week. That's what we decided.
Sure is. Sure stinking is.
Barry is back. We're going to watch that. I was excited that Veep was back. Kolsky, you're not necessarily a Veep person, right?
I'm not anti-Veep. I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not a.
But you're not like a.
I'm not a big Veeper.
You weren't fired up for the return.
No. I don't Veep regularly.
All right. Well, you're going to Veep this week for me.
Sure.
All right. Final season of Veep, by the way. Kicking off. We mentioned Miracle Workers. We're going to maybe jump in on that now that that's ended. And a show that we've been very anticipating for a long time, I guess is maybe the right way to put it. The television version of What We Do in the Shadows.
Yes.
Which premieres tonight on FX. And a whole lot of basketball probably be in there. And I'm going to try to watch Us, which I attempted to do last night, but was sold out on a Tuesday.
Hey, man, Jordan Peele's doing the damn thing, and I am not seeing that movie.
Yeah, but everyone says it's fantastic.
I'm sure it's great, and I am not seeing that movie.
I think 80% of the reason I want to watch it is to call you pussy afterwards. But
that's fine, and I'm not seeing that movie.
But I'm going to do it. And then we'll see.
In this climate, I think you should choose a different slur.
Really? Okay. Wuss? Is wuss better?
I think that's cool, yeah. I think we're still rocking wuss.
All right. That's fine.
I don't know why I want to refer to the climate so much on today's podcast.
Yeah, really. I mean, the hats are okay. It's because I used it as a fraidy cat. Is that the – we're not allowed to use that variation of the word anymore?
Interesting. I don't know. I didn't think of, yeah. I think that's the problem.
I guess.
It's an insult. Why, like, you're using it as an insult.
Yeah, that's one of, like, the word has, like, 12 meanings. That's one of them.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
But I don't think we're supposed to denigrate the pussy anymore.
But that's not, at that point, it's, I'm not going to get into the linguist.
Strange. It would be a strange hill to die on.
It's hard to live in the world these days, man.
It's not that hard. We'll figure it out.
It is when you want to mock people, damn it. It's hard.
That's true. It's harder and harder to insult people. I don't know that I have a huge problem with that.
It's not the worst outcome, is it?
No.
All right, bye.
No, I mean, I think that's always the thing, right? There are many outcomes, but I don't think any of these are the worst outcomes.
Well, some of them are, but that's another podcast.
Yes, it's not for the toy department. Did we cover all the stuff that we got for next week already?
I think that's pretty much it. Maybe we're trying to get the Adnan Syed check-in.
Oh, yes, and we're finishing Adnan Syed. That's the other thing. All right, great. I think we're done. Bye. Okay.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.